Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Eason here with life coach Monique Scott, and this is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. We're so happy that Monique can actually be with us today.
I mean, yes.
She's been in Texas dealing with all that crazy blackout and brownout and everything else out stuff. And it just kind of knocked her out last Wednesday. Fortunately, Joel was able to kind of sit in for her last week, but it's good to have you back. It's good to see you with power again. How about that?
Yes, it's good to have power and to be back. Oh my gosh. Last week was crazy.
Well, we'll get into that in a minute because I'm sure there's a good story to tell there. Before we get to that, I actually have an email that's been hanging around for a couple of weeks waiting for you to be back.
Okay, let's do it.
So this is actually from a listener named John who was responding in part to another episode that we did where somebody raised the question about it was through a discussion about Abraham Hicks. And the question was about praying and about do you pray to God? How do you term that? And when you pray, this is the big question, like major religion will basically treat God as kind of being outside of ourselves or separate from ourselves. Whereas the Abraham Hicks version is, well, you know, we're part of source energy, so we are God really. And so he wanted me to ask you about that. He said, I talked about the value of going within as opposed to outward praying, but he wanted to hear what you thought about it. So what do you think about all that?
Well, first of all, hi, John. Thank you so much for the email. So I tend to agree with Abraham Hicks. I was traditionally mm-hmm. taught from a Christian background, Baptist to be exact, that God is an entity, power, spirit mm-hmm. outside of me, and that mm-hmm. like I'm praying to someone outside of me.
Okay.
But as I have evolved spiritually over the last few years, I believe that what Abraham Hicks says is true, that God resides within us. And I actually believe, like Neville Goddard believes, that God is our own, as he would put it, wonderful human imagination, mm-hmm. which makes perfect sense to me, because if we create from our imagination, and if you think about, and this is just me, if you think about God being housed inside of us, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Where would he actually live? Like where? What part of my body would he be in? And it just made sense to me what Neville Goddard said. He's our imagination. If our imagination is what really creates our reality and God is the creator, then it just makes sense that it goes hand in hand, right? So John, I completely believe what Abraham Hicks believes, that we are essentially one with God and we are God.
Okay. Well, that's pretty straightforward. And you kind of bridged the gap there. You kind of covered everything there. I mean, you were both on the external and on the internal. I mean, you got feet in both camps. It's pretty good. You
know? Well, what do you think, Walt? How do you feel about it?
Oh, my journey was a little bit different from yours in that I rejected religion when I was 14. So, I had nowhere else to go but inward. It just took me about 50 years to get there. But I got there eventually, you know.
Right.
And once I got there, it was through Abraham Hicks's teaching and through others too. It wasn't limited just to what Abraham was teaching me. But the Abraham messages just resonated in a huge way with me. Yeah. Really, really huge way. So, yeah, I definitely am all about going inward. And that took some practice for me, to be perfectly honest. I think the hardest thing for me was recognizing that there was even anything there.
Wow. Okay.
And what I finally came to realize is that I had always known it was there, but what was there, I had always discounted as, well, that's not anything.
Really?
Yeah. I think partly because of what I went through with my own rejection of religion, I think I kind of cut everything off a little bit. But
okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way I've described it in the past is that connection, it just feels like an always on switch, you know, like a continuous power source, so to speak. And it doesn't shift. It doesn't vibrate up and down in terms of, you know, changing velocity or anything like that. It just stays right there. And it's like anything else. If you have something that never moves, after a while, you just kind of discount it. You don't even see it anymore. It's like background after a while.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what happened with me. It got to be such a background thing that I just figured, well, that's not anything anyway. So I'll just kind of skip that. And when I finally started to reach inside and look for where it was, it took me a while. But one day I kind of thought about that feeling that was always there. I always put it right at my heart or just below my heart. That's usually where I associate it. And I said, I wonder if that's it. I wonder if that's what I've been looking for. It's been there all along, hiding in plain sight.
So what was the situation or the incident that happened that made you kind of second guess and say, hey, wait, maybe there is something?
Well, I just from doing the show, I had so many really highly skilled, highly knowledgeable co-hosts telling me about going inside that I figured it had to be there. So even if I wasn't
they
couldn't be that many people who were wrong. Just not possible.
Right.
I of course know that that's not true. There are plenty of people who get wrong about stuff, but you know, it just, there were people I trust, you know, people I believe, people I agree with on most stuff. So I figured, I'm probably just missing it somehow. And just and I would ask often, you know, well, how do you make the connection if you can't find a connection? And it became topics of great conversations around the show. But I can't point to a specific event.
Okay.
It was more gradual over time, like a realization that kind of dawns on you gradually, like, I wonder if this, I wonder if it's that. Well, it could be that. I don't know. You just kind of go back and forth and finally, that's got to be it. Just like it's an evolution more than an aha moment. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of aha. It was more like, oh.
And so is that. Once you kind of started to have that feeling like, hey, wait, something's here, is that what kind of translated into your journey into the law of attraction and manifestation?
Oh, no. This was long after I was interested in law of attraction.
Oh, wow. Now,
like I said, while I was doing this show, and I became interested in LOA about 4 years before I even started doing the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I've been into this for quite some time. It's just that,
interesting.
As with everything else that I was learning, I mean, most of it I was approaching it intellectually, because intellectually it made sense to me and there was a resonance inside. But I couldn't turn, in my mind anyway, I couldn't turn the resonance into recognizing a connection. Which sounds really strange, I know. As I'm saying that, that doesn't make any sense, but that's what it was. That's exactly how it felt. Yeah, it's strange. I think what happens, put it this way, Abraham makes the comment repeatedly that you never lose your connection, but we're pretty good at pinching it off.
Many times.
For
sure.
You know, and so let's presume for the sake of discussion, that's what I did. I just pinched it off. Well, if you pinch it off and you don't even realize that you pinched it off, how would you know it was gone?
Oh.
That's an interesting problem.
Yeah. Wow. That's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's what really the whole concept of enlightenment and you know, what's the other phrase? There's a word that they're using now. I can't think what it is. Where you become knowing about this stuff and you weren't knowing before. I think that's all it really is. It's just kind of rediscovering that connection. Because I think everybody knew it was there at one point. At least early on in their physical lifetime in this life, they were aware of it. Yeah. And then we just kind of are trained to lose touch of it. So the enlightenment part or the awakening part, I guess that's the word I was looking for. The awakening part is just, oh yeah, I remember that.
And sometimes that's literally how it happens, right?
Yeah. 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 It's that simple. That complex, but that simple.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you, John, for that question. That was a good question.
Yes, thank you, John. Thank you.
We'll hang on to that one, too, as we're carrying on the rest of the conversation, because I think we'll be able to tie it in a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about what it's like to be disempowered by the power company. Well, actually, by the weather system. But
oh, my gosh. And the craziest thing, Walt, is I went to the grocery store on the Sunday before. So the bad weather was coming in, like, Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Early morning Monday, right? And but most people didn't think that it was going to be what it was. Like, we didn't anticipate losing power. We knew that there was probably going to be some snow. We knew definitely there was going to be ice, right? Mm-hmm. And I went to the grocery store And this sounds laughable now, but all I went for was to get some chili, like the, I make a homemade chili.
I love it.
And I went just to get that. And that was it. No water, no other food, nothing. Because I didn't expect it to be that bad. And so when my daughter...
It's Texas. I mean, Texas doesn't get weather like that. It just, it's so rare.
It's 79 degrees today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Literally a week later. So just, yeah. But it was interesting because, you know, I generally live in Florida, right? Mm,
right.
So this isn't anything that I have to really worry about, which is why I moved to Florida. Mm. And so I had so many Texans that I, you know, kind of spoke to and saw on the news and whatnot, and just people in this apartment complex just talking about they couldn't believe that we lost power, and then they started staggering the power, which means right. they bring it on for a couple hours, turn it off for a couple hours. But you never knew when they were going to turn it on right. and when they were going to turn it off, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We tried going to hotels. Every hotel was booked, and mm-hmm. then it got to the point to where we lost water.
That's scary.
We've got power now, but now we've got no water. And because of that, the hotels couldn't take us, right? And it was just like, we have no choice but to stay here and just kind of wait it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the water thing, that would be a little scary because you can go a few days without water. You can't go more than like 6 or 7 days without water. So you want that water to show up at some point.
Right. And luckily, I'm big on water. Like, I always have water. Mm-hmm. So we had bottled water.
So you had a supply.
Yeah.
That's
but when
good.
You think of like using the restroom,
yeah,
taking a bath,
yeah,
even trying to take a wash off, if you know, nothing.
Yep.
So that was interesting for about 4 days.
Yeah, and it's a long time to deal, especially dealing with the rolling power outages with those cold temperatures. I know what that's like too. That's a little frightening as well. So how did you maintain your perspective on all that?
It's so funny that you said that because my daughter, I know my daughter thought I was crazy. I know she did because I am literally laying in bed smiling. And she's like, Mom, what are you smiling about? It's like 13 degrees outside. It's like 50 something degrees in here. This is awful. And you know, Walt, I told her, I said, you know what, China, we've got it good because her apartment complex is fairly new. It's only a few years old.
Yeah,
so it's
sure.
well insulated. So it really didn't get very cold inside the apartment at all. Comfortable,
right.
actually, really, to okay. be honest with you, to say it was like 13 degrees outside.
Right, right.
But my thought process was just, God, I'm grateful because it could be so much worse. And it really was for a lot of other people, but
it was.
Honestly, Walt, I just thought, wow, how blessed are we, you know, that we're not outside, that even though this isn't ideal, we're not homeless. We're really not that cold, to be honest with you, right? So I'm always a glass half full kind of girl. So it didn't really bother me to be honest with you, because all I kept thinking about, Walt, is somebody out there has it so much worse than we do. And then once, you know, the power came back on and I started watching the news and I could get cell service and Google News and stuff was coming up. And I'm seeing all of these people, even some celebrities who live here, you know, in the Houston area or Texas, was talking about the home damage, water pipes bursting. Right. On top of not having, you know, power or water. And I honestly, Walt, I just felt grateful, really.
That is, first of all, a testimony to you and to the work that you've done in your own life so you can do that. It's also a fabulous perspective and a way of understanding perspective, because probably the hardest thing to do, I think you'll probably agree with this, is to maintain perspective in the face of strong adversity, whatever that adversity might be.
Right.
After the adversity, yeah, not so bad at that point. Before the adversity, it's not here yet, no big, but during it, that's where the rubber meets the road, as far as I'm concerned. And sometimes I'm good at it, sometimes I'm not so good at it, but that's the measuring stick, as far as I'm concerned. So the fact that you're able to do that so effectively was really great. Now, I got to ask, once you got through and the power was back, what was China's response to that? What did she think?
She was like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Like, finally, we've been saved and rescued. And I was like, girl, it wasn't that bad. To me, the worst part of it was not being able to flush. Other than that, it wasn't anything I couldn't live through again. I'll put it to you like that.
Not that you would choose to.
Yeah. Definitely, I mean, not.
Nobody would choose that, right?
Right. But it wasn't nearly, like I said, as bad as it could have been and was for a lot of Texans, millions of Texans, actually.
And many are still going through it, too. There's still quite a bit of fallout from it. Now, despite all the trouble you guys are going through, we did have one benefit here on the show, and that Joel Elston was able to come on, which was great. I got a chance to catch up with him, and listeners who hadn't heard him before got a chance to hear him. Really, really good. One of the things that he's talked about a lot in the past, he went through tremendous amounts of adversity, particularly when he was a young man in his 20s. He was homeless. He was a gambling addict. He was living in the streets of Las Vegas.
Wow.
He ended up getting arrested for embezzlement because he embezzled from his father's life insurance business. I mean, it was just like one long string of really awful stuff. And he has repeatedly told me he wouldn't trade any of that experience for anything. Not that he wants to live it again.
Right.
But he considers that to be some of the best stuff that ever happened because, first of all, he learned how to get perspective. He learned how to change perspective. And it basically, that experience set him up for life in terms of life experience and life experience that he was able to apply in his later life. So once he got past all that insanity, he became a therapist and then eventually switched over to life coaching. But he was a therapist for a long time, helping gambling addicts because he was a gambling addict. And gambling addicts usually get the short end of the stick because they don't have any money, so they can't get therapy. So he was helping people who normally couldn't even get help.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then later on, he started helping out young men mostly, sometimes young women, but mostly young men who were stuck in the foster care system, particularly the ones who were considered unadoptable.
Yeah.
And he found forever homes. I guess the current record, he's found forever homes for 43 of them in his career.
Nice.
Yeah. And this is just nice. This is actually highly significant because statistically, if you pass through to your 18th birthday remaining in the foster care system, it's almost 100% you'll end up in prison.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. It's not 100%, but it's pretty darn close. So he's not only doing something nice, he was saving lives.
Yeah. Literally.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was able to do all that because he had been a gambling addict. He had lived homeless. He had lived in the foster care system. He had lived in prison. He had been through all that. So he could come up against these pretty hard cases. I mean, some of these young men were just absolutely, you know, they were angry at the world. They were angry at their parents. They were angry at their foster parents. They were angry at the state. They were angry at everybody. And he was able to cut right through it because they would say, well, what would you know about this? He'd say, well, I did this, this, and this. I'd say, oh, really? And that gave, you know, so all of that terrible stuff he went through basically propelled his career. And that's why he says he wouldn't trade any of it. It gave him the life of his dreams to go through that junk. And that's a fairly common pattern I've seen since getting to know him over the last, what was it, six, seven years now that I've known him. Well, actually, I've known him about 8.5 years because I also interviewed him the very first year that I was doing the show. But I got to know him really well in the last 6.5, 7 years. During that time, as I've heard that story from him and kind of applied it, if you will, you know, watching and observing, how does it actually play out in the real world? Oh, my goodness. So often people who come from adverse circumstances skyrocket in their careers. Just amazing how often that happens. So yeah. I guess that leads to a question. Do you find it's been true in your life? Any of the adverse circumstances that, first of all, led you to be able to have the perspective that you had while Texas was going through that craziness over the last week? And secondly, have you had any experiences like that from your own life that have carried through to where you are today?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I honestly believe, you know, we talked about all of us being connected, all human beings being connected to source, right? We are one. We're one with the creator, source, energy, infinite intelligence, God, whatever you call he, she, or it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I believe that the experiences that we experience here on the earth plane is never just for us. I do believe because we're all interconnected, if you will, because we all are one, that my experience can help you. Your experience can help my daughter. My daughter's experience can help Joe, and on, right? So I think that it is a matter of keeping things into perspective when things happen for you, because I always believe, Walt, that the things, any adversity that happens in my life is for a purpose. That's what I believe. So I'm not ever the why me kind of person. It's, okay, God, what am I supposed to learn from this? Who am I supposed to come into contact? Because I know at some point it's going to benefit someone else, just like my rape, right? I know that it benefits or has benefited someone else who maybe heard my story or that I've talked to, and maybe I don't even know that it helped them, right? But it probably did at some point. If nothing else, a lesson of forgiveness for people. Mm-hmm. So I totally believe that, like he feels, it's one, all perspective, and two, since we're interconnected with source energy and we all are one, I believe that our experiences are to benefit other people, whether it's good or bad.
Now, as I suspected, this connects back to John's question that he raised, because he was asking about God being external versus God being internal. And we kind of agreed, yes, God is internal. We're part of God. God is our imagination, our consciousness, if you will, to use the Neville phrase. So it raises an interesting question in the context of what you just said, because you indicated that there is a purpose, not necessarily knowing what the purpose is,
right?
Which we usually associate, when we hear that phrase, we associate it with that external God, but we've also agreed that God is, we're part of God. So can you kind of talk for a moment of how can we have this purpose that we don't know what it is if we're also God and part of God? How can that be?
I think it's always leading and guiding. I think the God in us is always leading and guiding. And that's kind of part of the purpose, is to find out, to allow him to lead you in that purpose. I believe that that's what we're all here for. We all have a purpose. We don't know what that is. I believe it's our job to find that purpose, but also in a lot of ways to allow our inner man, God, to lead us towards that. And sometimes that comes with adversity along the road to that purpose.
Okay. And you used another interesting phrase there, lead us to it, right? That leading us to it, that or discovering what that purpose is. Talk a little bit from your perspective. How do we find purpose in life? Because that purpose means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, first of all.
That's
so it's
true.
A little bit of a vague topic, right? But
yeah,
it's something that I think most people who are at least in the conscious creator category that we address, they want to know what the purpose is, because they've kind of gotten a pretty good idea. Once I know what my purpose is, I'm going to have a happier life, because all I have to do is just pursue, you know, what's big for me, and my life gets better and I'm happier and my vibration's up and all that kind of good stuff. So, you know, if someone's asking you about how do they find their purpose, what do you tell them?
I tell them to go within, but I also think that our purpose, if you will, it's just what we enjoy, what we have a natural proclivity towards, right? So you and I, we love mind science. We love universal law of attraction.
Oh, yeah.
If you never did anything else with your life, Walt, other than this podcast, this is your purpose. This is it.
It's It's been pretty good too.
Yeah. Because I think when people think about purpose, I think they think of some big esoteric kind of grandiose, I need to be an Elon Musk, you know, Oprah type person in order to contribute to the world and have purpose, right? But if all you ever wanted to do was get married, have children, be a mom and a good wife, that's your purpose. If you do that well and you're happy in that, that's your purpose. Because now you are raising wonderful little human beings who knows what they're going to grow up to be, right? They could grow up to be this next Steve Jobs or Oprah or whatever, right?
Right.
So I don't like to put too much emphasis on, oh my gosh, I got to find my purpose. I got to figure out, you know, I just say, go within, ask God to lead you and guide you to that thing. Because I know now that my purpose is manifestation and mindset coaching. Did I know that 5 years ago? Absolutely not. And I didn't even ask for it. I was doing confidence coaching for women when God led me, or basically told me that this is what I was going to be. This is what I was going to
do. You will do this.
Say again?
That's what it sounds like. You will do this.
Yeah. You know? And I resisted because that wasn't the purpose.
Mm.
I thought that I was here to pursue or to do. I thought it was going to be confidence coaching. But I still do some of that within my coaching business now. So, and even now, Walt, sometimes I think, I believe that we can have multiple purposes, right? Because I also do a bit of business coaching. 2 years ago, wouldn't have even been on my radar, but I absolutely love it. I believe that's a part of my purpose too. So I don't tell people to be so constrained by what they think or what society tells you this your purpose should be, some big grandiose kind of calling, if you will. But, you know, your purpose could really just be being a housewife, being a mom, being a teacher, doing the thing that you love, and you're helping mankind. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were saying that, I was thinking of one of the people who appeared in the movie The Secret, Neil Donald Walsh, the author of the Conversations with God books, right?
Yeah.
Right? Do you remember that segment in the movie? He says, you know, people think that there's this great big blackboard in the sky. And they actually have a blackboard in the background while he's saying this. And on the blackboard, it says, Neil Donald Walsh, a handsome guy. And then there's a blank underneath that. And that blank is supposed to tell you what your purpose is. But there is no blackboard in the sky. So he says, your purpose is what you say it is.
Yeah.
That's what you were just saying.
I completely agree with that. And then that kind of translates over into what we were talking about. If God resides within you, and I believe that, what does God say? I am, fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
And if God resides within us and we are God, then I am whatever or whomever I say I am. I am rich. I am poor. I, you know, am a millionaire. I am not a millionaire, right? So that whole I am and fill in the blank, fill in your purpose. Right. Yeah. And I believe that whatever it is that we choose, let's say I chose to be a nurse. Well, maybe something happens and I can't go to nursing school, or I end up leaving nursing school and then I go a different path. Well, then, in my opinion, that's God deviating me from what I thought my purpose would be, more towards what my purpose really is going to be, if that makes sense.
Well, I might phrase it a little bit differently and just, I think, say the same thing. I would say we tend to think that we have a purpose in life and that we're trying to find our purpose. But what if we have purposes?
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. Multiple purposes. Who says there's only one?
Why do we have to be limited to one? I mean, a lot of us are trying to find one, and one's pretty good, you know. But why do we have to be limited to one? Why can't we have 2, 5, 10, 16? I mean,
why not? Know. We're multi-talented, aren't we?
We certainly are.
So then that makes sense.
Yeah. So open up the possibilities instead of closing the possibilities. That's the way I look at it.
And your purpose could lie in every single talent that you have. And I believe that it does. Or it can.
And, And no matter where you are in your life, I mean, I'm 63 years old now. As I say that, I think to myself, my God, 63. Where did the time go? But the second thing I think is I'm in the middle of trying to start a new career, a new purpose in life, to be a public speaker. At 63? Are you
and
nuts?
It's amazing.
But
I said, and it's amazing.
Why not? Yeah. Well, it is. Yeah. And the funny thing is there's no law. There's no restriction that says, well, you can't do that after 60.
But you know,
you can't do that if you aren't 21 yet. You can't pursue your dreams. It's too early. You're not allowed. You know, if you're 40, you're over the hill. You know, so it's too late to pursue your dreams. It's like, who invents these rules anyway? That's what I want to know.
Exactly. And why do you believe them? Why do you accept them? Right, mm-hmm. as truth for you. Maybe that's true for someone else. If you're 40 and you think that you're over the hill, then you are, because you are what you believe, right? But if you're 40 and you think life is just beginning for you, like Oprah says, life begins after 40, then life begins after 40.
Well, exactly. I mean, being over the hill means different things to different people. It means something completely different to a downhill skier.
Right?
I mean, over the hill is what they're looking for.
Correct.
You know, being a bobsledder climbing the hill just doesn't really cut it. It's just not part of the action. So
no, it's not. And that's what we're talking about. It's all a matter of perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Just like Joel was saying, it's perspective.
It is. Perspective is an amazing and powerful thing. We've talked about it from a lot of different angles here on the show, mm-hmm. and also in, you know, society at large, other podcasts, other venues, you know, Facebook groups. Conversation goes on in a lot of different places. There are two things I find really fascinating about perspective. First, how we can choose it and how mm-hmm. powerful it is when we make choices that are different from the ones we're used to making.
Absolutely.
It's remarkable how significantly we change our lives just by changing perspectives. So that's the first piece. The second thing that's really interesting, and we've had long conversations about this here on the show, is what happens when you have two or more people who have competing or at odds with each other perspectives. Mm-hmm. And a few things happen with that. With the second genre, so to speak. One thing that happens is people gang up. They say, well, everybody's got to think like I do, which is really interesting.
Isn't it?
It's very interesting. You know, the world is broken. There's one of the themes, right? The world is a broken world. We can't heal the world until we all come together.
Right. That is a common theme.
And no one ever asks, well, not no one, we ask here on the show, but a lot of people don't ever ask why. Why is that so important?
And
why is it so important? Why do we have to have unanimity of agreement? In fact, if we have unanimity, what happens to perspective?
There's a question.
It's a really good one. Mm-hmm. Because if you have unanimity, you've got one perspective.
Yeah.
Which gets pretty crowded.
Yeah. Right. I would agree.
But yes, this is also the source of a lot of angst for a lot of people. And it's a source for a lot of conversation for teachers like Abraham Hicks, who teach that this contrast, because that's what we're talking about here, this contrast of perspectives is what creates the expansion of all that is. Which, by the way, was a phrase that took me a long time to grasp in and of itself, what on earth that meant in, you know, precise detail. And mm-hmm. I'm still learning that one, to be honest. But the idea that if it weren't for competing perspectives, we wouldn't exist.
True. We would not. Everybody and everything would be the same.
It's kind of spooky, really.
Kind of boring, really.
Well, it does give new meaning to how to handle events like Texas last week.
Yeah, right. If everybody's a Debbie Downer and woe is me and this is awful and terrible, right?
Or if everybody is demanding a life where there are no Texases. Because that's what really what they're looking for, right? Everybody's like, well, I never want to have an experience like they had in Texas.
Yeah, but it makes you grow, or it should, right?
What do you mean it should?
And gives you an opportunity for gratitude.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I believe. You grow from situations like that because you can only imagine. You know, we always like to say, well, if that was me, or if I was in your shoes, or that kind of thing. But you really don't know until you get into that situation, or you walk a mile or 2 miles in someone else's shoes, right? But yeah, people are quick to say, well, if that was me, I wouldn't, blah, blah, blah. You don't know what you do. And until you're in that situation, usually those are the types of situations, Walt, where you learn about yourself, which is why it's good. You know, there's always some good that can come out of negative situations. I think you have to find the good because it's there some kind of way. And if there's no good, you make it good.
You raised an interesting word there too, that I think ties into the point that I was raising earlier that you were elaborating on, which is the word negative. Something that Sydney Chavez and I talked about quite a bit, that positive and negative are actually misleading terms. And this isn't the way she would explain it. This is the way I would explain it. But positive and negative actually have a moral component to them. Mm. Like there's something that's right. There's something that's wrong. There's good and bad, good and evil.
Right.
And when we include that in our experiences, we're saying, well, that's a good experience, but this is a bad experience. That's an evil experience. That's a good experience. That's a great experience. And in that judging, as she likes to call it, for me, this is where different ways of explaining things actually gets a little bit confusing. So we have to kind of work it out to make sure we really are on the same track. But we are. We're on the same page. Mm-hmm. The way she describes it is when we judge in that way, when we cast a judgment that says this is good, this is bad, what we're really doing is we're missing the point of what we're doing. We're losing our perspective. And we're replacing it. We're replacing our ability to be conscious creators with a tendency to be dependent upon, am I in a good situation? Am I in a bad situation? Is this a good thing that's happening to me? Is this a bad thing that's happening to me? She tells the story about the Chinese farmer, you know, the famous good luck, bad luck story. I can't repeat it, but it's a very specific story, and I don't remember what the specific steps are, but the question is always, is it good luck or bad luck? Who knows? And I think the first one is that there's the farmer has a horse, and I don't remember where the horse comes from, but that's a good luck situation. But then the horse goes lame, and all the people say, well, that's bad luck. And the farmer says, well, good luck, bad luck, who knows? And then his son comes and does something with the horse, and the horse is able to walk again. I'm screwing up the details of the story. There's an actual story, and I don't remember what it is. But it goes from a good luck situation to a bad luck situation to a good luck situation to a bad luck situation. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the situations is at one point the son breaks his leg or something along that line. Oh, what bad luck. And the farmer says, good luck, bad luck, who knows? And then the country goes to war, and the son can't go to war because he's injured. So everybody says, oh, well, good luck. He says, well, good luck, bad luck, who knows?
Right.
And it illustrates, it's all perspective. How are you going to look at it?
Yeah.
The whole thing is perspective. So between Sydney and I, we pretty much came to agreement. We'll use the words positive and negative because people expect them. But we don't think in terms of positive and negative. Ooh. She and I think in terms of preferred and not preferred.
I like that.
So now you take that moralistic component out of it entirely, because there's no moral statement to, well, you should prefer this or you shouldn't prefer that. You know, don't get me wrong. There are people who will try to do that. They will try to impose that kind of standard. But I think most of us would agree you prefer what you prefer. You don't prefer what you don't prefer. It's pretty straightforward, you know?
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of the morality out of it and just turns it into a preference thing. Yeah.
I'm going to try and start incorporating that in my language.
It's helpful. Well, you're going to find it really easy because you already do that anyway, because you're able to maintain perspective even in the face of, you know, blackouts and stuff like that. Where we find it to be really useful is in helping somebody who doesn't have that ability just yet. It's kind of a way of greasing the skids to getting there quickly. Mm-hmm. Because now we're getting all the muck out of the way that keeps us from getting to that perspective of being able to see where's the good, where's the desirable, where's the preferred in what's going
right.
on. You know? So.
Oh my gosh, Walt, I tell you, I really love that. I really, really love that. I'm definitely going to start using that. I love it.
It has a whole different feel to it.
That's why it resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
That resonates with me. That aligns with who I am more so than the positive and the negative. Mm. Thanks, Cindy. Thanks.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that. I love that.
By the way, listeners will be interested in knowing I had a little email exchange with Cindy the other day. And she was telling me about stuff that she's doing. She's doing very well. She's doing great. Still don't know exactly when she's going to be coming back or what's going to happen at that point. But I knew listeners would like to hear that she's very happy with what she's doing right now.
Good. I'm happy. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Good for her.
One of the things that I've found to be fascinating about this preferred, not preferred way of looking at things, when I'm communicating with somebody who is either stuck on a negative circumstance, a circumstance that they don't like, mm-hmm. and stuck on how to deal with it, or somebody who's actually coming at me, coming after me, trying to, you know, challenge me or, you know, force me to think a certain way that I should be thinking and so forth. When I rephrase whatever the conversational point is in terms of preference, it's amazing how all of the energy drains out of what they're trying to do. It's like it just takes all of their floor space away from them. Because
oh, I love it.
How do they attack somebody for his preference?
And you're absolutely right, because you can't tell me what I do and don't prefer.
Yeah. What I prefer is what I prefer, you know? And I prefer apples, you don't prefer apples? Well, fine.
Nothing to argue about it.
That's what it is. But now we can let go of, well, I think apples are good. Well, I think apples are bad. You know, we can let go of that part.
But you probably always try to have one. Well, you should like no.
You should. Oh yes. Yeah. There are three or four buzzwords that whenever I see it in a headline or hear it in a conversation point, I almost immediately turn off. I flip the switch.
What is that?
One of them is could. If cool. I see like a news headline that says blah 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 could, I immediately dismiss it. Because that's just a speculation.
True.
We're not reporting news anymore. So they're not telling me anything that's actually informative. They're just telling me what their perspective is. And because it's a news related item, I'm sure it's going to be what they don't like.
Of course.
So why would I want to listen to anything more about could?
Right. Because of course they prefer. Okay.
They do. They prefer something
could happen.
They prefer what terrible thing could happen.
Mm-hmm.
What horrendous thing could happen? And I have absolutely no interest in hearing that. That's the last thing I want.
At all.
So could is one of those, or could and should. There's, you know, they basically go hand in hand. If I hear somebody say should, instant turn off, I'm done. But the only reason that I might pay attention is if they specifically ask me to help them figure something out. And then I'll kind of, you know, push it aside. Just say, okay, that's just their way of dealing with the fact that they're feeling very limited right now. But I won't buy into the should. I'll just, you know, yep, okay. You prefer whatever you want to prefer. And my answer, inevitably, whatever it is I'm responding to, inevitably comes out with, okay, you prefer this. And I prefer that. And the should kind of disappears. Unless they're really revved up. Then they'll try to should me again.
They'll try to should you again?
Yeah, they're going to should me. Yeah. There's a lot of shitting that goes on.
Yes, especially with parents. You should do this. You should,
yes.
Yeah, I agree.
But there's not too many of those words, but could, should. There are feelers that aren't coming to mind right now, but I see those buzzwords. And as soon as I see it, I know I don't have to pay any more attention to it. I know everything I need to know about whatever that thing was.
I'm going to start paying attention to that.
It's
I never
really
thought
valuable. It's a great filtering process.
Hmm.
And it's particularly good on I don't know about you. I try not to spend too much time focused on news just because it's so down.
I hardly watch it at all.
It's a great way on those occasions where I do want to find out something about what's going on. It's a good way to filter stuff out quickly because I can scan through headlines and anywhere I see a could or a should or one of those kinds of words, I just skip right past it.
This sounds like a fun little experiment for myself, along with using preferred and not preferred.
Yeah. Oh, that combination is powerful. Yeah. In fact, I'll do the same thing with news articles on preferred and not preferred. I look at the news, and I only scan headlines. It's very rare for me. Well, that's not true. I do look at some articles. I'm looking to see, does the headline match the article? Because we know very often headlines are clickbait. And they're trying to convey one thing, and then you find out they're really talking about something else.
Right.
So I'll sometimes check things, is what I'm saying. I'll look at the article to see. And I'm just scanning for like 3 seconds to see, does that match? Oh, they're talking about that. Okay, I'm done. You know, I don't immerse myself into a great deal. But that combination of using the preferred and not preferred, do I prefer the topic they're talking about, or do I not prefer it? If I don't prefer it, I don't go there. I'm not interested. I don't want to go there because I know how unhealthy all this news crap is. And if I see a should, would, or could in there, I'm done with that too, because I know they're just going to push an opinion. They're not actually sharing a factual, here's what's going on kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. I can flip through news quickly, really quickly. I can get a very good handle on the little bit that I want to know about in a minute or two. I don't spend a lot of time on the news.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much time at all.
Neither do I. The most news is when I open up Google browser on my phone.
Yeah.
Then underneath, it automatically feeds the news for Fort Lauderdale and let me know what's going on there or whatever, right? And nationally, of course, what's going on. But I just, honestly, I don't even read what it says. I'm a picture person, I'm a visual, so I just scroll, and if the picture catches my eye, then I read what the headline says. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna try that. I'm gonna try that. Look for any could, look for any should, and when I'm reading it, do I prefer or not prefer to read this instead of looking at the pretty pictures?
Well, no, the picture approach can work too. I mean, because they'll clickbait you all over the place. They'll try to get all kinds of ways to get you to look at something.
Oh,
So I would use I should probably pay a little more attention to the pictures. I tend to skip the pictures entirely. So you're probably right there. Look for something. Is there something that you like about the picture? If you don't, that's a sign to move on.
Yeah.
I can probably reduce my 2 minutes down to 30 seconds, you know, so it just reduces the amount of time I'm paying any attention at all to this junk that's out there. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Let me know how it works out when you try it. I'm curious.
Yeah, I just had a thought around that and thinking the last time I looked at the news feed, the very first thing that came up was the picture of a fish sandwich, right? And of course it caught my attention because I like fish sandwiches.
Okay.
But I didn't even read what it said. And although I like fish sandwiches, Walt, I preferred that this is something fast food related based on the picture of this fish sandwich. So I prefer not to even read it. I just kept scrolling. So
it wasn't a good fish sandwich. It had to be a fish sandwich of a particular standard before you'd even look at it.
Yeah, it was but it was probably McDonald's because it was square.
It was square. Yeah, right.
So it was probably a fish fillet. I don't know that for sure, but yes, it wasn't very appetizing.
It was a fish rectangle is what it was.
Is that really fish? Is that parts of fish? I don't know.
I haven't tried one of those in so many years. I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. Nor do
and
I care to find out.
Nothing, I'm sure. That's why they slap on all that tartar sauce and cheese. Guys, how tasteless it probably really is.
It certainly is. Interesting you should mention that too, because Louise, my wife, is very big on flavorful fish.
My daughter too.
Same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She doesn't want fish, and she's disappointed if fish that we normally have that has flavor doesn't have the level of flavor she's looking for. In fact, sometimes she'll say, well, this doesn't have any flavor, and I'll think to myself, yeah, it does. It's light, but it's got some flavor. Oh, no, not from her perspective. It has no flavor at all.
I think she and my daughter would get along very well. Is your wife a foodie?
Is she what?
Is she a foodie?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure how I define a foodie, but food is important to her. Let's put it that way. Okay. I mean, how would you define a foodie? What does that mean to you?
People who like food, they generally like to cook. They like to eat. They like to eat out. They like to try different foods. Like they
somewhat
follow
then.
Blogs and stuff like that.
I mean, she would tell you she makes the food because she has to, but she likes to eat it.
She sounds and like me.
And she's good. She's a good cook. Don't get me wrong. She's actually a very good cook. But if we could have somebody in to just make all the meals for us, she'd be very happy with that. She'd like that a lot.
That's me.
That's right? You too? Okay.
Yeah, I generally tend to date guys who like to cook. That's like a fire.
Okay. All right. That's on the list then. That's another interesting question. Let's talk about that one for the last few minutes of the show. Do you have a list of criteria for guys that you're looking for?
Is fat meat greasy? Of course I do.
Is it a written list or is it just a list in your mind?
Both, but, both because, after two particular relationships that I let go of years ago, this was back in 2016, I got an index card and I made a list of everything I wanted in my partner and I manifested him. Now I didn't have narcissism on the list, which is why it didn't work out, but everything else. Yes. So from that kind of let me know what I like, what I don't like.
Mm.
And so now it's just here. And it's funny that we're talking about this because literally I just got on the Hinge dating app almost 2 weeks ago. And first of all, I was very surprised, but I guess I shouldn't be. I don't date a lot, right? I'm married to my work, to be honest with you, but, I had the Hinge app set for the location, Fort Lauderdale, right? Because that's technically where I live.
Right.
Okay. Some decent guys. I switched it to Houston, Texas, where I am now. Completely different set of guys. Everybody likes their idea of a first date is tacos and margaritas or tacos and beer. And I was like, how many people can like tacos out here, right? Oh, my gosh. So, yeah.
Well, regional differences, right?
And that's what my daughter said. She was like, Mom, it's, you know, you're looking at the Fort Lauderdale, Miami area. That's a different kind of guy. He's living a different lifestyle.
It is. It's very different. Yeah. Texas
is like states out here a lot.
Texas is the middle of the country. It's the middle of the country, but it's basically southwestern.
Right. Right.
It might as well be in Arizona for what Texas is like, you know.
But I do have good Mexican food out here, and I love Mexican. It's my favorite.
Is it really? Okay. Yeah.
I like jalapeno. I like cilantro.
Okay. All right. That's good. Yeah. Good Southwestern or good Mexican, if it's authentic, especially, you know, made by somebody who really knows the cuisine, grew up with it, so forth, is, yeah. It's really, really good.
There's a lot of those little taco trucks, taco stand truck thingies out here everywhere. Mm-hmm. And some of them are pretty dang good.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy that. They're cheap and they're good and they're authentic.
We lived in Virginia for about 11 years, which of course is nowhere near Texas. But there was an Hispanic family that moved into town. They took over an installation called the Main Street Grill and they didn't change the name. Uh-huh. And they were serving Southwestern and Mexican food under the name Main Street Grill in our town. And so when we moved to that town, we saw Main Street Grill. We said, oh, I want one of those. Like, okay, well, we'll check that out sometime. We finally got around to checking it out. And of course, the food was just knock your socks off. And we kept thinking, these guys got to change the name of their restaurant.
Right. I mean,
they're not putting out the right image of who they are because this food's fabulous and was cheap. Like you said, really, really inexpensive food. It was it was a cheap date. It was really, really, I mean, we would be able to feed each other for like $10 a person. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. You know,
how inexpensive it was. And we kept telling them, you guys got to raise your prices. And unfortunately, they didn't stay in business. Aww. So, you know, they need to, you know, they need to shift the way they were promoting it, and they need to change the price structure. But Oh my goodness, the people who did know about them, it was like the most closely guarded secret in town. Don't tell. We don't want anybody else to know, right. Which is really counterproductive, but what the heck.
Right.
But, oh, that food was good.
So yeah, that's been my experience here in Texas so far. But yes, I do have a list.
I always find that it for people who are manifesting, there's always a written list. That's why I asked that question.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And when they manifest, it's always, I've never heard a story different from this. It's always they checked every item on the list.
Really?
Yeah. Including with my wife, by the way. When
Did
my
you
wife met me,
your wife?
The other way around, she manifested me.
Girl.
Back
I
when
love it.
She was a former therapist, back when she was in school to become a therapist, they'd had her make out a list like that. And she had made out her list, and then she'd fold it up and put it away and forgot about it for years. And then she met me, and she started telling me that story. And then she had that blank look on her face, and she said, wait here a moment. And she spent about 10 minutes going to look for it and found the list and pulled it out. And we went through item by item. She says, yep, you're that. Yep, you're that. Yep, you're that. Yep. I went right down the list. I checked everything off on her list.
I love it. I mean, I'm surprised, but I shouldn't be really, because that's how it goes.
Have heard so many stories, particularly from women who make written lists of characteristics that play out exactly that way. They get exactly what they're looking for. And I've had a few, like what you told me, that you had a list, but you learned through experience that it was an incomplete list, that you just didn't have enough criteria on there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's always the same thing. They get everything they're asking for on the list. So the moral of the story is, be careful what you put on your list and make sure you make a list.
Yes, because it will manifest.
It will manifest. Yep. And the more detailed you are, the better what you get.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's an interesting thing. We'll have to pick that up as a subject next time to carry on a little bit more. I want to ask you a little bit about, try to remind me about this, because otherwise I'll forget.
Okay.
But I want to ask you a little bit more about the specific kind of stuff that you've asked for and what you've gotten, and whether or not it surprised you when you got it.
Ooh, that's going to be fun.
Because that was what happened with Louise, and that's what happened. Cindy had a similar story to that kind of thing.
Okay.
I've had that same story. Yeah. So let's make that. But remind me that that's our conversation point, or one of our conversation points for next week.
Will do.
All right, good stuff. Want to remind people, you can do like John did. You can use the Elevate Today app to send in your question or your comment, maybe even just a topic idea you want us to address. That's what John asked. He wanted to know what Monique's perspective would be on praying in versus praying out. You know, so take advantage of that. That's why we have that built into the Elevate Today app. And we like hearing from you. And I got to tell you, Monique, lately, some of the emails we've been getting have been long emails, like, you know, going on paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. Our listeners are paying a lot of attention to what we're saying.
I love it. I love it. Thank you, guys.
So we got to be on our game, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We got to stay right on top of it, because I mean, they're checking us, right?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They're listening.
They're listening. It's a good thing. So, you know, do take advantage of the LOA Today app. And there is a new version that's going to come out sometime in the next month or two. I'm putting in a copy of the book that we created a couple years ago, Your Daily Dose of Happy, Real Success Stories of the Law of Attraction. It's got some 55 stories in it. I've gotten 10 of them transcribed to the app, so it's taking a while. But we'll get there. They'll all get in there, and then there'll be an announcement about that. In the meantime, thank you, Monique. Glad to have you back. Glad to have you back in power again.
Glad to be back.
Thank you very much to our listeners. We appreciate you as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye,
bye,
everybody.
Guys.